All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View, where we talk about issues of the day, politics, geography, history, current events, music. I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour. You can mail me at this email, my email address, which is pkbbs2@gmail.com. I always like to thank BBS Radio for the opportunity to present my views to you, and they're very cool about things. I feel very free. They don't censor anything. There's no Zionist control. There's no other types of censorship. So I think they're doing a great job, and I appreciate the opportunity because mainstream media, you know, sings the same song. It's part of the opinion cartel. It's, I believe, under quite powerful Zionist control and state control, and it's corporate, but they're going down a certain path, which is a sort of an opinion cartel, and so that's why I really like alternative media, because we're able to present a different viewpoint that's not controlled by the government or the CIA's tentacles and all these and Zionism and all this other stuff. So I enjoy the opportunity to speak on these things. And I weave together history and economics and philosophy, history, my good and bad humor, geography. And I try to give what I think is the libertarian point of view, the third stream view, the libertarian point of view, which is should be present on the major media, but you never hear. You just hear the tired old left-right paradigm, and you don't really see or hear opposing views or the other views that should be heard, because you see the same tired guests on the same status quo shows. And here on alternative media, you're getting a different point of view. You're getting different guests who can speak their mind in a way that they couldn't speak it on the mainstream, controlled, managed news media. So I enjoy being able to talk about the things that interest me and to put my perspective on things, which is also my way of sort of coming right, cutting to the chase and getting to the point of issues of the day, my solutions for fixing things, without the usual more government programs, more taxes, more regulations. And I don't go that route at all. And I also enjoy the opportunity to criticize groups of people or countries or nations or things that need to be called to our attention. However, when I criticize, I don't follow it. If I'm criticizing groups of people or other nations or this and that, it's not genocidal. I'm not advocating harming anyone. It's always an exposé on power, regardless of who wields it and who yields it. And nobody is free from – no group of people, no race, no tribe, no religion is free, because there's, you know, people who do bad things that come from any race of people, any religion, any country. Everybody has their criminals or villains. And I just like to expose and name names on my show of the people who I think are behind things that are contributing to the downfall of our nation, ruining the economy, creating more war across the world, which is continues to bankrupt our country, which is something I wish the Tea Party would figure out, that yes, we want to cut spending, but until they realize that the military budget is bankrupting the country just as much as the welfare budget, then they're never going to figure it out. And Obama, you know, recently, I think late last year, he signed the largest military budget ever. So to me, Obama remains Bush 2 with a makeover on steroids. Just a few subtle differences. He continues to go down a path that I would never go down. Now, I'm supposed to have I'm expecting a call from a good friend of mine. His name is Rick. And we have a lot in common about finances and music and this and that. So I hope he will soon call, get his take and perspective on things, and talk about his background a little bit. He just informed me. I've been working on paperwork during the day in my office, and I haven't been watching TV or listening to the radio. And I'm just told that apparently Oprah has a sister. So I guess that'll be great news for mainstream media to talk about, because I haven't heard much about Britney Spears lately or Lindsay Lohan, because that's the most important stuff. You know, who cares about millions of people unemployed or the economy, you know, continuing to stay in the toilet? And I think it's going to be worse this year myself than last year. It's funny how Obama creates hires more bureaucrats and government employees to create new bureaucracies to study the problem when we Austrians have known all along the causes of recessions and depressions. Like I've said before, we know the causes, the how and whys that these booms and busts occur in our economy. We can't tell you when, but we can tell you why and how. And there's a lot of great literature written about the Great Depression, especially Murray Rothbard's, I think it's called The Great Depression, his take on that, and explaining what led up to these problems. For example, Hoover and Roosevelt raised taxes during the Depression, which is something you shouldn't do anyway, and especially during a downturn. There should be no raising of taxes, no increase of regulations, and no strikes, especially when the economy is like it is. So my advice to everybody with a job is you got to be lucky and thankful you have a job, period. And to me, anybody who goes on strike when things are like they are right now is just ridiculous. It's adding gas to the fire. It's making things worse all around. I especially laugh at the possibility. I haven't heard much about it lately, but the fact that there would be NFL or AFL, a major league football strike. So, in other words, millionaires are going to go on strike. Does anybody else see how insulting that is? I do.
PK.
Oh. Looks like Rick is on the line. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Good. How does it sound? Is it distorted? How's it sound? Sound all right?
No, it sounds okay in my ears, but I've got a distorted ear. So
okay. Well, you sound okay. I detect a bit of an English accent, though.
Yeah, there's a bit of a one. It's lingered over the years. Still got it.
I just want to know that my growing multitude of listeners knows that. My friend Rick, born and raised in England.
That's right. Nottingham. Where Robin Hood came from.
Robin Hood. Yes, well...
He stole from the rich and gave to the poor. Remember that?
Yes. Well, now Robin Hood is in Washington, D.C., and I don't know if you heard my new... Well, I'm quoting the late, great Joe Sobrin, but three words, Rick. Need, greed, and compassion. You know those three words, right?
Need, greed, and... Yes, I do. Yep.
Greed, this is the new definitions of, according to the late, great Joe Sobrin, which I really like. Greed is wanting to hang on to your own money. Need is other people who think they have a right to what you have. And compassion is the politician who arranges the transfer from you to the so-called less fortunate. That's need, greed, and compassion.
Hmm.
You got that figured out?
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm just trying to – I get it. I mean, it's –
And I mean, you're from the land of taxes and all this, and I understand that. And I love England. I've been there 10 times. I love Europe. I don't care for all the socialism and all the taxes, but I love Europe. And before we continue, I want to mention something to you. I don't know if I've ever worded it to you this way, but I have said it to people overseas and people from foreign countries, and it immediately – endears me to them in a sense, because when a lot of foreign people are talking to Americans, they know that Americans, a lot of Americans just don't get it about the rest of the world. Am I right?
Well, they think the world stops at the East Coast or the
right.
West Coast.
Well, Rick,
it's an island mentality.
Yes, well, and you come from an island, but your country is quite the melting pot. You've been all over the world, you know, the British Empire, et cetera, et cetera. But here's the three things I like to say to people I just meet if they're from overseas. I like to say this humorously, and I'll say it to you right now. Rick, I'm an American who actually knows world geography and world history. Can you believe that?
I'm just going to pick myself up off the floor.
Rick, I actually know that there is a big world outside of America's borders. What do you think about that?
Well, there is. I mean, it's yes. amazing that you know about it. I mean, I thought you didn't realize that, actually. That's very good.
Well, you've accused me of that in the past.
I thought the world was flat.
Well, you've accused me of that in the past erroneously. I think you just do it to wind me up. And also, here's the final one is, I'm an American who actually knows that the rest of the world knows more about America than America knows about the world.
Yeah, that's probably true, too.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is probably true.
And I relate much better to people who have traveled or, you know, people from outside of the outside of the U.S. I instant interesting conversations. And I don't when I have these conversations, which I so much enjoy, people from outside of the world, I don't come off as the arrogant, you know, American.
Well, I think that's the problem, because I think a lot of people I don't think they mean to be disrespectful to anybody else, but they don't travel, and until you do travel and get out your little bubble, if you like, if you want to call it that, you don't really learn. You know, you've got to get away from the nest, and I do think, you know, with America being so powerful and so influential in the world, it's a shame that its people really, a lot of them haven't experienced any part of that world. So all they see is what they see on the television set, and they believe it. And, you know, for them, from their point of view, there's no reason why they shouldn't believe it. But crikey, it's such a tainted view.
Well, that's true.
It's crazy.
That's true. Only an American would get off a plane in a foreign country and say, look at all the foreigners here.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the old ugly American tourist, right?
Right, right. Now,
there's millions of jokes about that, you know.
Of course. But you guys have had this extensive empire, which came to a close pretty much by World War II, but before that, for maybe 200 years, I think, pretty close, you had a global sort of empire. You had trade with all these countries. So British people, I think, and Europeans have a much more knowledgeable view of the world and what's not going on around them. And I think so much of Americans and America maybe is resting on its laurels. And when I criticize America, unlike what Sean Hannity was saying, why do you hate America? I'm not criticizing the people or the country per se. I'm criticizing its institutions like the federal government and the mindset of people who have this arrogant outlook on the world or remain clueless about the rest of the world, which also brings in the fact that, you know, history and geography are the lost subjects in this country.
Well, you have a point, and I think that's why they can do it, because history and geography is lost on most people. And I think, you know, just the way you grow up in Europe is, I guess, very different, because you are, I mean, for example, Scandinavian people are taught to learn four or five languages from school. In England, unfortunately, we don't do that, because
right.
we were so pompous and arrogant about the fact that we own the world, so everybody should learn English.
Well, it has become the language of business and trade in the world, and that's a good thing. But Europeans, you know, all their neighbors, every neighboring country speaks a different language, and they all communicate and trade, and it's, you know, I love Europe. Ideally, I would spend my summers in Britain, in Europe, my winters in, say, Florida, South America, Australia. That's, you know, in my world, that's what I'd be doing. And I'm thankful to live here, and I appreciate everything, but I don't think I'm better than anybody else. I don't think I'm better than my neighbors next to me, and I don't think I'm better than somebody from another country in another part of the world, because this is a nation of immigrants. My grandmother was born in Italy.
Are you Italian?
Well, having said that, Italian American, and you know, there's only two kinds of people in the world. You needn't laugh. There's two kinds.
No, I'm
just kidding. There's two kinds of people in the world: those that are Italian and those that want to be. And don't forget, up till about AD to 600 AD, we sort of conquered your little island nation there for a while.
We being Italian Americans?
No, the Italian. Nice point. The Romans who came up there and. In fact, I think the great white pith helmets were designed from the Roman helmets, sort of came from that.
Now, I didn't know that.
When I look at some of those, I sort of see that. But moving right ahead, now, I spoke to you earlier today briefly, just to line a few things up. You had told me that apparently Oprah has a sister.
I just learned that. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that absolutely mind-boggling?
Well, I don't find it amazing, but I didn't know she had any siblings.
That it can take all this time on television, take airtime, the fact that Oprah's got a sister, that just blows my mind. It's fantastic.
Was it a love baby, or was it, you know, was it?
You know, my girlfriend has all those stations, and I just sort of pass by them and get the gist of it and move on without thinking about it. It all drives me crazy.
Well, at least the media loves these stories, so they'll have something to talk about for a while.
I know, it's mad, and the British media is the worst of the lot, I'm afraid, unfortunately.
I like the British media. I like the British newspapers.
Yeah, but they sensationalize everything. It's just
They sensationalize things.
I like the Times, perhaps the Guardian.
Yeah, I like the Guardian.
Everything else is, you know, everything else. I mean, I remember when I don't know what I can say on this program, but. I remember when I was a kid, you'd pick up the news of the world. You know, you'd be about 10, 11 years old. You'd pick up the news of the world or the People on Sunday because you knew you were going to see some boobies naked. It was great.
Well, that's interesting because I had to have a breast removed from my hand once.
Well, yeah, well.
Yeah, so.
You say.
Thank you. I like British newspapers because I find them easier to read, and I always enjoy them.
Well, they're like a lot of them like comic books, aren't they?
Well, I like some of the stories, I don't look at so much of that. I really enjoy looking at them. I'm always fascinated when I'm in England because for its size, its influence on the world just astounds me.
Oh, massive! It's unbelievable. Yeah. If you go fortunately in my business, I've traveled the world and you see the influence of that little tiny island on the rest of the world is absolutely shocking. But we've talked about this before.
Yeah, I see it in architecture. I see it in some of the, you know, the forms of government, even the police uniforms.
So
they have a lot of the Commonwealth countries did maintain a lot of their traditions. And I'm basically pro-monarchy. I think the queen is a uniting factor for the Commonwealth countries and a symbol of unity for the British people. I look at it like that. I always thought that they should cut the royal list a lot, you know, cut everybody back a lot, but still have a monarchy.
Well, I'm a true monarchist. I mean, I don't see how we could be England without it, quite frankly.
However, it's not. It has very little power. It's mostly symbolism, which takes me to my next point: that a king or a monarchy is not necessarily a bad thing for a country, as long as they hold back the power of the state.
Well, say that again.
A king or a monarchy is not necessarily a bad thing for a country. As long as that king holds back the power of the state, because he has a vested interest in keeping things prosperous and his people happy, and they've often monarchies have gained more territory through marriage, not war.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the political intrigue we had a lot of wars, but also a lot of the political maneuverings were done just exactly through that, weren't they? I mean, they were marrying their daughters off at, if you go back to the Tudor period like that, they were marrying their daughters off at 12 years old to secure peace and prosperity for the people.
Well, you're pretty smart for a musician.
Well, thank you very much. and the other thing I'd like to say about monarchy, I mean, and I stand aghast at people like Tony Blair and you know, some presidents, and the fact that they're so ready to send people to war, but they don't go themselves. One good thing about the monarchs years ago, they wanted to raise an army to go and fight, they'd be in the front line.
That's right.
I guarantee that if our presidents and our prime ministers of the modern day era had to be in the front line, we wouldn't have a war.
True. Now, at this point, can I ask you a question?
You can.
Are you having fun being interviewed here?
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's
I'm
great.
I'm sitting here relaxing. I've got a glass of wine and
You've got a glass of wine. You've got a glass of wine. Do you realize? Do you realize that if this was 1925, you'd be doing something very illegal?
I know. I mean, there's nuts.
And Elliot Ness and the Untouchables could come into your place, arrest you, destroy all your liquor, and take you away.
Yep.
Now, all our, you know, let's talk about World War One. So, while our troops are gone for during World War I, Congress passes the Volstead Act, which is prohibition. So all these GIs, as you would say, Tommies, they come back from Europe. They can't even buy a drink legally in a bar or a pub, as you would say. But they were fighting for democracy. Meanwhile, the rest of the world had to be laughing at the stupidity of the American federal government.
Well, I'd have to agree with you, but think about it now. If you're 18 and you go to fight for your country, you still can't come back and have a beer.
Right, right. You'd have to go to England.
Yeah, but really, I'll get one in France.
I'm surprised the no smoking stuff ever passed in Ireland and England, because, like, I hate smoking, but I put property rights ahead of that. I can't believe that that ever passed. And, you know, when I was there last year, true to form, as you, the, you know, the people are standing outside of the pub smoking and the pubs are kind of empty inside.
Yeah, where was it that they just announced there's going to be no smoking outside? Was it New York?
In America?
Yeah.
You know, only
like
in America.
No smoking, I mean, if you go to. There's somewhere they've said if you're going to work anywhere, if you're on company time, there's no smoking, even when you're on break outside.
Wow. I'm not surprised, but America is becoming so authoritarian, more rules, more regulations. It reminds me of that old saying, only an American would say in the same sentence, I'm an American and I'm free. No one can tell me what to do, but there should be a law against it.
Like, you're all individuals. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this show is about individualism and individual rights, which this country was supposedly founded on, and it's slipping quickly, as you know. It's I look forward to seeing the empire collapse, the American empire collapse, and I would like to see the rebirth of the American
Republic.
It's rather
ironic, isn't it? Didn't you fight for taxation because there was no representation?
Yeah, supposedly.
But what have you got now?
A lot more of it. I've always been fond of saying that if we had the same level, the same size of government as we did in 1776, and it remained that size, I would much rather be a British subject under the crown than this huge government we have. And something else I've been fond of saying now for years, and I've mentioned this to you before, but I'll say it again, it greatly saddens me to see that Britain has been the lapdog of the U.S. ever since World War II.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you.
Well, they were dragged in both of these wars. Look, they drag us into these wars, you know.
Just lately it's got worse. I mean,
it's gotten a lot worse.
Just lately it's pretty embarrassing.
You know, when I was in England last year, I told some of my mates over there, for you Americans, mates means friends, when I was over there, and I said, you know, if I was a member of parliament from your area, you know, the first thing I would do if I had the ability is I would kick out all the American bases, and I would have the British forces staff their own bases, just like I would, you know, in other countries. But in Britain especially, I'd give the American installations 6 months to leave, and now from then on, they're staffed by British forces. So the local communities who are dependent often on, you know, bases would still have that revenue, and it could be, you know, phased out slowly or more over time. But that's something I would do. And this whole thing is costing us $1 trillion a year to maintain this stupid globalist empire that we're not supposed to have.
Well, what did the Israelis say? We can't police the world. Isn't that an argument he had?
I don't know. Was he a Little Englander? I thought he was an imperial.
I'm sure it was Disraeli who once said that one of his quotes was, "We cannot police the world," and it was, and I can't go further than that, I'm afraid. But I seem to recall that from my. But how true, eh? I mean, you can't. I mean, it's impossible. How can you tell people, you know, what to do in their own backyard? I mean, if somebody walked into your backyard and started telling you what to do, what would you say? Bugger off, right?
Well, if they were Americans, I would cower and say, please don't bomb me. Let me clarify that. I meant the American federal government, because what the federal government does is it gives foreign aid to countries it likes and bombs the ones it doesn't like. When you think about it, they get foreign aid, they get our taxes, as long as they toe the line. But if they don't, or they cause a problem, then, you know, they get bombed. It doesn't matter which party is in office.
Right.
Now, tomorrow night is Obama's State of the Union address, apparently. And I was glad to see that I think one of the commentators afterwards will be the Right Honorable Ron Paul.
Interesting.
Which is good news.
What channel?
It'll be on all the major networks. All the major networks. But here we are on alternative media where we can speak our minds and talk about things that the major media won't speak about or wouldn't let us speak about. But that's one of the things I like about alternative media is we're free to speak our minds, and you hear information that you're not getting on the mainstream, which is another reason why governments, they don't like the internet all that much. And I've said for a while now that the way they're going to try to control it or further control it is through, you know, they'll use the excuse of terrorism and child porn or child, you know, molestation. Right. That's going to be their wedge. Instead of punishing individuals or those, you know, responsible for this and that, they'll go after the whole internet.
Oh, right. Of course they will.
And this is something the globalists don't like because they can't control it as much as they'd like to, and they can't control war propaganda as they used to and as they would like to.
I mean, you just have to go back to George Orwell and, his book 1984. I think he just got the year wrong in the title, but absolutely. I mean, that was all about state power and state control. And
right.
They don't want, in my opinion, they don't want the people really not rising up. I mean, that's not what I'm trying to say. But they, as you say about the internet and all that, they want control of that because it's a fear factor. They haven't got control. It scares them.
That's why I'm a big fan of WikiLeaks, and he's just scratched the surface, because the people damn well sure ought to know what these damn politicians and bureaucrats are up to, especially when they're trying to foment war and they want the ignorant sheeple masses to do their bidding for them.
Right. Well, when you think about it, why does anybody go into politics? Power and money. That's all.
Power and money. My point of view is
all this rubbish about they want to work for the people and all that, I think that's a load of cobblers.
That's true for 99% of them. The only exceptions I know of are Ron Paul and myself. If I was in politics, like my bio says here, I'm not interested in becoming wealthy. I'll make plenty of money from speaking tours. I want to be a statesman, not a statist. I would try to do what isn't in the Constitution and carry that out. That is my duty. And I would not be trying to foment war and create war behind, behind the curtains, which these people do. And then they get all nations fired up to go to war, and you see the mess it's caused and the bankruptcy it's caused and causing.
Well, I mean, I don't think we've seen the worst of that. I mean,
maybe not. I hope not. You know, and the federal government's out of control. They want to invade all these other countries. And, you know, and what I've learned, especially in the last few years, is that a lot of this stuff is enabled. And the CIA has its tentacles in the media, in universities, much deeper than we would ever think. And the CIA cooperates with your MI6 and Mossad especially. So those three are the masters of deception.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. I have nothing. I have nothing in front of me to corroborate that. But that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, because you had said earlier that. You hate the media. Basically, you meant the mainstream media and all the crap they're up to. You don't like them.
Not at all. I mean, I just find it so. You, depending on whichever channel you watch, it's so biased opinions, and they don't really give a full side of the story, and then you'll get people on there, these commentators, you know, contradicting themselves with their statements about how they are open with their opinions, and yet at the same time they block everybody else's. It's all bizarre. It's all got crazy.
Oh, of course. But we have to understand that this is what the government wants, and the CIA, of course, they want stories like Oprah's Got a Sister and Lindsay Lohan. That dumbs the people down. They want You know, so they can continue their
the
stuff.
Attention to the real thing. And it's like every time there's a problem, and let's bring something up to scare everybody, so it deflects the real problem. Everybody's attention gets taken off somewhere else, and.
Of course, I think they're also
we're all here struggling to make a living.
Yeah, and speaking of struggling and making a living, I've said for the last 2 years that the unemployment rate is much higher than they're telling us it is.
Nothing would surprise me, and I was thinking the other day, and it was, you know, we've had the national, the world economy go south, then we've had the big bailout for the national economy. When's it going to start happening to the local economies? Look at California. I mean, that's just one of them. When's it going to start with the rest?
Well,
you know, where how far does this whole thing go?
Arnold, for example, California, he became the guy he was criticizing, Gray Davis, the guy he wanted to unseat because of his, you know, huge spending. Arnold's just a big government Republican with an Austrian accent.
Right.
He should have studied Austrian economics, which I am a proponent of, and that also comes through on my show. Now, speaking of problems, you and I have something in common. We are both struggling musicians and struggling landlords.
Blimey, tell me about it.
You know what? That's true. I mean, fortunately, my landlord situation is stronger than yours, but I can relate to you because you are a landlord. Now, most landlords or property owners don't understand the reasons why we're in the toilet, that the economy has gone south. They don't know the nuts and bolts of the boom and bust cycle, if you will. When you were buying some of your properties, they were priced much higher, and it was part of the boom. It was like, wasn't it around 04, 05, 03, something like that?
Yeah, basically. First one I got was in 02 or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got rid of one just in time. Should have got rid of more, but, you know, I didn't see it coming this fast.
Yeah. So are you managing to hang in there so far, or are they're all rented, aren't they?
They're rented, but there's not a great deal of leeway in the rent. I mean, I'm still, I did them all based on, and it was, I don't know, in hindsight, it was 50-50, I guess, 2020, should I say. You know, in hindsight, it was, I wouldn't say it was greed. I think a lot of it
not
was misplaced information I was given.
Not at all. That's where I want to explain some of this. You, like most people, are an honest person who accumulated what they have honestly, and that's how you went about things, based on what you knew and what the interest rates were and what, you know, how things were looking. Well, it's The problem is, and the masses blame the banks, but that's only blaming the symptom, because the banks are tied into the central bank, the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve has caused 99% of this problem by lowering the interest rates so low. And they're tied in with the Bank of England also, which did similar things to your own country. Plus that idiot Gordon Brown sold off a lot of Britain's gold reserves, I think, if not below market prices, very cheaply. I mean, you know.
But he is Scottish.
You're all Anglo-Saxon, white, Northwest Europeans, basically. So, you know, but anyway, so what Tony Blair, I mean, he's one of the ones, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, he and Bush and Cheney should be tried and executed as war criminals. I mean, I'm very serious about this. There's a lot of people I would, and I'm very serious, there's a lot of people I think should be tried and executed for these wars and the messes they've made, and the world would rest, would breathe easier. And it should be a message to the rest that we're not going to tolerate this crap anymore. I'm more like, I believe in what Muhammad Ali said about Vietnam. He said, no Viet Cong ever called me nigger. He had no fight with them.
There you go.
You know, But ever since World War II, we've got this huge military-industrial complex, which is sucking up billions of dollars. And that, and I being a capitalist, that money needs to go for other investments in the private sector and for consumer goods. Because, you know, weapons and bombs and tanks, yes, I want a defense for our country. But it's, in my view, it's about 80% beyond what it should or could be still to efficiently defend our borders. And I resent the fact that they want to stick this missile defense system in Europe or Poland or Western Europe. They have no constitutional right to do that. I don't mind having it here to defend our country, but the arrogance of doing this to other countries and the cost of us, the cost is ridiculous.
It's madness.
Yeah, it's madness.
But it lines the pockets of people who have got the power.
Right. Yeah, and those are the pockets that I want to have greatly shortened. You read my secession solution back on in July, and you liked it. I went over it a few weeks ago during a couple of different shows, and that's where I'm coming from about how to fix things. And my way of fixing things, the best that I can figure out, does not take anything away from anybody. It doesn't threaten their liberty, their property, their peace or their rights, but it's a way to reform things. I would like to be a great reformer, and I could do it right here from my office. I look up to your great reformer, William E. Gladstone, which was the great leader of the great British Liberal Party that most people have forgotten about.
I've forgotten about that. What was that? Who was it?
Gladstone, William E. Gladstone.
Yeah, I know.
The leader of the British Liberal Party. See, the word liberal is a bad word in America now, especially amongst, you know, conservatives and Republicans.
Right.
But that used to be a great word. It's been perverted to basically mean socialist, but I'm a liberal in the classical tradition, which is classical liberalism. And it goes back to, even before, but the great British Manchester School. You may have heard of Cobden and Bright, who were the leaders of the Anti-Corn Law League.
Yeah,
pretty clever for a Yank, eh?
Very clever, actually. You should be on the radio with a show.
Interesting you mention that, because I would like to have my own show. You know who Bill Maher is?
Yeah.
I would like to have a show with a similar format that I would come down from the bandstand and I would host. And by the way, I've got a $30 white tuxedo, a used white tuxedo with gold sequins on it.
Wow. And you got that from Liberace's tomb? Well, I mean, where do you get that?
No, please don't go there. No, I got it from a friend of mine who they had a production company, and they sold off a lot of their gear, and it was a dancer's tuxedo, and it happened to fit me, and I must say,
there you go.
I look quite good in it.
Yeah, right.
and I, you know, and I'm, I have a clown side to me, the humorous side, but I have a very piercing intellectual side too. So it's there mixed in with the comedy. Cause you know, Bill Maher, I watch his show to learn, and I like some of the humor, but he's become, you know, very liberal in the modern sense and advocating all this nonsense, things that I, you know, am opposed to, but I like the humor of it all.
So and, talking of humor, you like Ricky Gervais' thing of the night at the
Did
Globe?
You get to see it yet on YouTube?
I've not watched it yet on YouTube, but I saw him live, you know, in England.
Oh, really? Back in the day or how long ago?
Not so long ago. But I was over there and I saw him in, it was 2007, I think.
I think he's great.
Yeah, I saw him live in Manchester. And he said something very profound in his act. He said, being famous doesn't mean anything anymore. And everybody sort of went a little bit quiet because they thought he was going to tell a joke.
Uh-huh.
And he said, no, I'm serious. He said, you don't have to have talent to be famous anymore. Said, you know, years ago, you'd strive to be good at your craft. And because you were good at your craft, you got in positions which made you famous. He said, nowadays you don't have to do that. You just have to do something ridiculously stupid, and you'll become famous.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that.
Profound.
I like his I like his methodology. I mean, the way he can insult people, he does it in a sort of it's humorous and it's classy and sometimes tacky, but there's a little classiness mixed into it sometimes, the way he does things.
I got put off with him once. He was doing there was a live feed from Wembley Stadium, and it was something to do with the Royals.
Uh-huh.
Princes were there, and it was about 2008, and I forget what it was, but because the Royals were there, he wasn't meant to, you know, F and blind it and all that.
Oh, right, right.
And something happened. It was a live feed, and there was something going off with the cameras or the... There was a sound problem in another area, which meant they couldn't cut away from him, which meant he had to ad-lib, and he fell on his face. He didn't know what to do.
Well, that's
okay. Surprised me a great deal. It sort of disappointed me, actually.
That's okay. Comics fall on their face. Musicians fall on their face.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I think truly great comics would have been able to get over that. Tommy Cooper would have got over that.
Well, he's recovered since then. He's fine, and I like his show, The Office. He's very clever. So thank goodness in your country you can still criticize the Royals or the politicians without off with their head. So you have that much freedom still going on.
Yeah, old Charles got some eggs thrown at him the other day.
Well, maybe it helped his appearance.
Probably Camilla's.
Yeah. Actually, his father's the one that deserves the eggs.
Oh, well, yeah.
He's got a foot and mouth disease, pretty much. But anyway, back to the touch on the music thing. We've both worked on cruise ships together, playing in the orchestras, and you were my first band leader, my first real band leader back in the day.
I know, years ago, right?
I can honestly say that, and I've had many band leaders, but you were one of my favorites and one of the good ones I can count on one hand. And the way my bottom line criteria is for judging a good band leader is, in the case of you and just a few others, I can honestly say, or I can't honestly say, I learned what not to do from them. Because
it's a compliment, right?
It's a compliment. From you, I can't say I learned what not to do, because you always had good people skills. You knew your material. You knew how to lead a band. You were helpful. And, you know, you gave a guy a chance to put it right, or you were forthcoming with knowledge as long as a person was trying to do their part. And so, you know, that's a good thing. And there was a few others that were like that too, but a lot of them just were, I don't know, on a power trip, or they had no people skills. So you're in the good pantheon, Rick.
Well, that's good. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just about, you know, you're doing a job, you've got to try and get the best you can out of the people you're with and you're working and you're all, you know, you're all there to make an end product, right? So
that's right.
I've never understood the theory that you pound somebody into the ground because you think they're not doing it right, or you think you want it a different way. I mean, just talk normal.
Well, I have pounded a few people, even as a sideman, but they deserved it. The people who are arrogant with this ridiculous attitude, who don't care, they're the ones that deserve my wrath, if you will. But I, as a band leader now, I don't have an ego about me being a drummer. It's all about me. I'm the show. You know, I play too loud. I don't listen. No, the singers and the band, I'm always listening. You know, fast ears better than fast chops or fast technique, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's teamwork, isn't it?
Of course.
The best teams, the best businesses have got the best leaders, right? It all starts at the top.
Now, I have an ego. I like to call it a rational ego. My ego is about the finished product. So if the band and the singers, if we do well, I'm saying, yeah, man, we were great. We did a great job. That's where my ego's about. And like Buddy Rich and some of these other, Art Blakey, Billy Cobham, I, as a drummer, I like to showcase the talents of other musicians and singers.
Right.
I'm not jealous of their success. And I used to hear some grumbling on the bandstand about, you know, attitude towards the singers. Well, I'd like to see some of these musicians go out there and entertain and have a patter and let them see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the artists,
ballgame.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why the artists tend to often earn more. And, it's a different bag. But I would sure like my shot at show business from bringing my band in. And I would host a show. That's what I'm wanting. That's what I would love to do. And but I would do it, you know, with the gloves off. And that's why I like cable. You can get away with, you know, saying more things and hammering things to the point. And I would like to have, you know, certain guests that you won't see on mainstream TV or media also, because certain guests are shunned just because of their positions or things they may have said. But on my shows, I like to have them on, and I'm not going to ridicule them. I want to interview them, and, you know, but I can humorously criticize them and show them the error of their ways. That would be my way of going about things.
Well, I think you should do it. I mean, there's got to be some cable. I mean, have you looked at the New York market? I mean, there's got to be some.
I don't know how
cable,
to do this.
Outlets there that are going to welcome something like that. So you've got to put get a demo together, and you know how to do that, for goodness sake, but aim it towards a show of that nature.
Well, yeah, see, I've got the team.
It wouldn't be a pleasant change, it would be an interesting change. I think you might get a lot of press.
I would love it. Now, the thing is, I've got two venues, I've got the band, I've got the singers, and I've got the resources to shoot a pilot, but it would have to be linked to some.
All you need
now
is the girl.
Yeah. Well, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah. Exactly.
And come. So to speak. But that's what I want to do. I've got it's a horn-driven R&B band, great arrangements, great charts. In fact, you're one of my contributors, contributed some arrangements to the band, not for free, of course. But
No.
Yeah, so I would have my band with my singers, and I would begin the show, then I'd come down from the bandstand, and I would host the show, and then maybe every now and then I'd say, I can't take this chat anymore, I got to play some music. So I'd go up to the bandstand, play a couple songs, and I would love to have guests, artists, come on and sing with my band or play with my band. That's what I would like to do, but it's going to have some serious, hard-hitting political opinions, overtones, and discussion, and that's where I'm sure I will get into trouble. But I'm like Teflon. I can't be bought, and I cannot be intimidated by political correctness or censorship.
Well, I think you're there. You need to get out there and do it.
Well, it's finding the link.
PK.
PK needs to find the link. That's why if any listeners can ever help or call in or write me, I'd like to find where the link is and how to do the next step. I would rather do it, you know, film it locally where I'm from, and then obviously you get to send it anywhere. But this is what I'm This is what I'm after, and this show is my way of trying to learn how to, you know, I'm trying to find my stride as a talk show host. I mean, right now, I would love, I mean, a lot of people would like to do this, I'm sure, but I would love to take on Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, and even the crowd on the left, because I, when I hear them speak, I'm formulating in my mind how I would respond, and I am not a status quo. You see, Rick, these people are all gatekeepers for either the left or the right. They're just gatekeepers. They basically agree amongst themselves about certain things. You know, they fight amongst themselves, but they're united together about, you know, third stream views. They don't want that.
Right.
And that's why you don't like
the right media. I think you got to get out there and do it.
Well, what would Absolutely. You suggest?
I'd send you donations.
But who would I contact? See, I haven't seen any of this anywhere. I don't know who I would
contact.
Have
to pitch. I think you would have to pitch. You'd have to get a. I mean, your writing on the website for this show is really good, and then you basically put in writing what you just told me now about the fact that you want to about the way you want the show to be, or the format of the show, and. Then you would pitch producers at local cable networks. And then from there, if somebody likes it, then somebody picks it up and moves it on to the next step.
Right.
You know, the next stage. The next thing you know, you're on HBO.
Well, I don't know about that. And I don't want to water down anything either.
Well, no. Well, that's the... Yeah, I mean, hopefully it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might get bought into the political game.
Well, you know, I don't mind, but I won't. It's just not me to sell out. I haven't sold out musically. I have no desire to gain personal wealth from politics. The only wealth I would gain is the salary and a speaking tours. That's it. But I don't care about guiding legislation to somebody so they can get rich. I want to do, you know, my background in economics and philosophy and history. It's like a guide. It's like. It ain't going to work. You can't buy me. It's not going to work. You know, I guess there's very few people maybe that could do that, but I have no desire. I have no desire to give in to things that I know are wrong for the economy and for other people and, you know, the world, if you will.
Well, I think we need more people like you in office.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I fear assassination. I especially fear CIA, Mossad, FBI. I'm very critical of Israel and Zionism. This is another topic that needs to be addressed, and it's been a thorn in America's side for years, and it goes back to British foreign policy. In fact, I can speak, you know, extensively on that too. I don't know if I've told you this, Rick, but I'm more of a student of World War I than World War II. I'm familiar with World War II pretty well, history, but World War I to me is much more interesting. And I remember you telling me that your grandfather survived 4 years in the trenches.
Yeah, he did, 4 years.
Your grandfather had it much worse than our fathers who fought in World War II. Yes, war is hell. I've not been in war, but I know it's hell. I've spoken to veterans, but when I look at World War I conditions and what they, you know, compared to World War II, to me, World War I was much scarier, much more frightening. So it's amazing to me that your grandfather survived 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when you look at some of those battles, the Battle of the Somme, I mean, Britain lost like, I think about, was it July 1916? Something like that. They lost like 250,000 troops.
Yeah,
I think in within only a couple days, or, you know, within 1 month. So
thousands died a day, didn't they?
Yeah,
you've
been to Afghanistan. Not you, your military has in the two Afghan wars, 1848, 18 something like that, and another one. You took it on the chin there, big time. Russia had a big problem there. Alexander the Great didn't stay long. So it's, you know, that country's never had a central government, and those people are very tribal. You can't impose democracy on them any more than I could make you love heavy metal.
Right. And as I said to you a while ago, you know, at the start of the show, none of the political leaders were on those front lines.
Right.
Well, actually, sort of Churchill was in the First World War. He was a correspondent.
Yes, well, you know how I feel about Churchill, but that's another discussion. But I'll leave it with this. I remain very pro-British, but very anti-Churchill. Anyway, would you happen to have any question to ask me about the economy or political economy that I might be able to clue you in on anything? Or economics?
Well...
anything that's bugging you today?
Because
I'm running out of time. I've just got a few minutes left.
You know, it seems to be the whole system is messed up. And I don't know what the answer is. And I'm sort of, you've caught me with my pants down, really. Not
I know what the answer is, Rick.
But, you know, to ask you a question about that and how come, you know, I don't know what the answers are. I just think that there's a lot of whitewashing going up. And I think, you know, I think it, I don't, I've never understood. Even since I was a kid, I used to ask my dad, what's foreign aid? I've never got that. You know, you've got people poor in England, you've got people starving in America, and yet the government are sending thousands of dollars to other countries. I don't get it.
Rick, it's foreign aid has to be looted unconstitutionally from, I'm speaking about Britain now, but U.S., from taxpayers given to other countries, and they become dependent, props up dictators, inefficient industries. It's the governments, they're doing it by force, and it's very wrong, and I'm opposed to it. And in a nutshell, the other things, I would have...
Now, how do you stop that?
Well, we need to shut the money off. It should be every party's platform to shut the money off.
Right.
I would have given no bailouts.
The problem is how like, you know, how does anybody going into office with all the good intentions that they may have stop the juggernaut? Because obviously it's not one man. I mean, Obama right now is in power in you know, he's the president. Whatever he really wants to do personally, obviously, is not going to get done.
Right, and thank goodness.
He's not a dictator for a start, but you know, what he ever thinks personally, if he wanted to stop that, there's no way he could stop it.
The only way it has to be done is that principled people like myself or Ron Paul, that's who has to do it. It's like a metronome or a strobe tuner. It's not the perfect, they're not perfect, but it's the best thing we could have, and stand to our principles is the best thing we could have. I don't care what everybody else thinks. 2 and 2 equals 4. You know, if you ask Obama what 2 and 2 equals, he'll say, "What do you want it to equal?" So they've abandoned the Constitution. They've gone on. They're spending like crazy. They're spending on the military and the welfare system, and it's brought the whole economy down. They're equally guilty. And the trouble with conservatives is they hate the left more than they hate the state, and they hate the left more than they love liberty and freedom. That's something I see also. So as I wind down here, Rick, I'd like to thank you for being on Third Stream View.
I'd like
to have you back again if you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, it was very nice, actually. Just don't get me in trouble with your political meanderings.
No, I'm keeping that... keeping that anonymous and but not backing down from my views on things. And as I'm a drummer, as you know, good drummers are consistent. So my views remain consistent.
Mm, very good.
And with that, my friend, I'd like to thank you again for coming on to Third Stream View. I appreciate your friendship and your input. And thank you for being the first to let me know that Oprah has a sister.
That's okay. My pleasure. Talk to you later.
All right. You take care.
Ciao.
Talk to you later, mate. Now, everybody, I'd like to thank you for listening. Once again, here, I'm your host, PK, at Third Stream View on bbsradio.com. I'm here every Monday night, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central, and 12 a.m. Eastern. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Until then, I'll see you next week. PK, over and out.